Hi, and welcome to another episode of CineNation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I am Ben Gertz in the illustrious Portland, Oregon.
What's the weather like there?
It was raining earlier when I went into my garage. I've been working from home now, so I don't go outside and experience the rain very often. But inside is toasty.
It was fairly hot today in LA. Like, it's been fairly cold, then it was, like, hot. I think it's getting to the 80s, like, this week, I believe. So, Ben, what have you been watching? My question to you.
Yeah, I watched the first episode of F is for Family, the Bill Burr animated series on Netflix. I've been watching Cosmos with my son, which is amazing. I'm like on episode 4 or 5 of that, and then finishing up Sense8.
Okay,
I'm kind of a sucker for a lot of these original Netflix series. Like, I can't keep up with them, and that, like,
yeah,
that's legitimately all I need at this stage. I watched like one new episode of Chef's Table, another original. Like, I feel like it covers a lot of the, you know, a lot of ground I need to cover.
How much are they releasing? Because how much are they releasing every month? Are they, because I know at one point they're talking about releasing something like every week or like,
yeah,
what,
it's accelerated. They have on their this is the benefit of being a nerd, they have on their investor page a list of all the upcoming items that releasing. We'll add it to the show notes, but basically it's getting crazy. I think they're, let's get this list up here, because it's becoming a lot. I would say easily something every week, basically. Let's see here.
Full House coming up soon on Netflix. That's coming up this month.
Fuller House. Are you planning to watch it? I'm not really like a big...
I will plan to watch it, because I want to see what they're doing with it. I mean, I watched some of Full House growing up, and I'm interested to see what they do. And then they recently just announced a Gilmore Girls thing on Netflix, reunion type show. So
we'll
see how it goes.
Yeah, let's see. So I found the list here. So it's like they have all the stuff that already premiered, and then what's upcoming here. I mean, people can find it out, but Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny.
Finally.
Yeah, that's going to come out.
That was supposed to come out like September.
February 26th. That's going to be a global original. There's a new cooking show, Cooked, comes out on the 19th. Better Call Saul Season 2 comes out, which, you know.
That's just showing it.
Yeah. I don't know why it gets to make the list here as like a...
Netflix original.
Oh, first run non-US is what it says. Interesting. That's interesting. It was a big enough buy. They felt like it was useful. Daredevil Season 2 comes out in March. Big Holiday is in March. There's a big... I mean, it's easily one thing a week. The Get Down from my boy Baz Luhrmann or whatever, August 12th, 2016... That's going to be super interesting.
You're so excited, I know.
Special Correspondence, the Ricky Gervais movie, April 29th. Like, come on, there's some great stuff to look forward to.
Is that a TV show he's doing?
No, it's a movie. So that Boss. Oh, well, yeah, The Get Down.
Boss.
Yeah, sorry. The Get Down is a series, but Special Correspondence is a film.
The birth of hip-hop in 1970s.
Yeah. I think it's the perfect, it's the reason we have Boz. Like, it's the reason he exists is that it's going to be music. Like, it's without question, it has music in it. And so he gets a chance to do all the things that make him great.
We got Jaden Smith making a reoccurring appearance in the movie or the show, apparently.
I'll tell you what, all of this is interesting too. When you look at this list, Brandon, let's cut right to the chase. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them say global original. They are all going to be available globally immediately. when they launch. And
yeah,
I mean, let's cut into it really quick here because...
Okay, let's go to our topic.
I think here's what's strange to me. I mean, there was coverage of their announcement at CES saying that they had, you know, launched in 130 countries, you know, BuzzFeed and The Verge and all these different places covered it. And, you know, it was a pretty, honestly, like pretty... here's what I don't understand. This has never existed. Mm-hmm. Am I like That's what's surprising to me. It's like, okay, we have YouTube, we have the internet. Like, internet video has existed. That's fine. But the fact that they have such a very, very clear business model around it. They're launching these shows, and if you live in Thailand, if you live in Brazil, if you live in Argentina, if you live in Russia, like, they went down a huge list, 130 countries. You can now pay money directly to Netflix and watch it. And I don't know. To me, it's like, this feels like a different thing. Because, for example, there were some articles that were about, and this will tie into our other topic we want to hit on, is Sundance and the race to buy up a lot of this content. But there were other stories about some of the, like, other competitors in this space in Europe and stuff. So, like, Sky Network and some of these others that have streaming services. It's interesting because you have these huge multinational companies like Sky that operates in multiple countries. But because of the structure of those businesses, like, they are limited in what they can do. Basically, the articles were talking about how they were starting to form alliances with, like, the BBC and with some of these other, like, ITV and different players in Europe to try and collectively bid on streaming rights for, like, Europe, right? So instead of competing against each other, they're trying to basically form what's basically a cartel. In economic terms, they're forming a cartel. It's like OPEC. OPEC is for oil. They control the price of oil. That's a whole different thing that's going on right now. But OPEC's been around for a long time. But they're basically, like, ignoring each other, right? That's what's so compelling about it. It's like, these companies that have been in each other's throats, that are huge, huge companies, are so put off by the business model that Netflix has brought, you know, just in this past couple months, when they finally started unleashing this global strategy to where now you can't ignore it. It's not an announcement. It's not a potential. It's a real thing. And these other companies are responding by going, holy crap, we gotta, because basically they're losing, this is where we can toss it over into Sundance, is they're losing out the rights to get some of these shows. Like, they want to make some of these originals, and they're losing because Netflix is coming in and saying, oh, we're not going to just buy the rights for the UK or the rights for France or the rights for Brazil. We're going to buy it and run it globally. Your show, and not only is it, like, a prestige thing, I think, in a way of saying, like, you could be everywhere, it's also we have more money. They have more money on the table.
Well, the big thing is, as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, or however you want to say, is that you want your stuff to be shown to as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole global platform does for people. And I know they talk about, and the big thing they talk about was film, the interesting part they said in the video you sent was the filming locally to go global.
Yeah, there's a great, sorry to cut you off, but there's a great, you're fine. After the announcement, because, you know, the announcement is them talking about how amazing the world is, and I didn't even watch all of it. It's over the top, you know, corporate announcement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's a great Q&A afterwards with Ted Sorrentos and Reed Hastings, and a lot of these questions come up about the expansion and the timing of the rollout and the future business model. And one of the key things they say early on, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes, is, you know, they talk repeatedly about, you know, we're finding local talent around the world to tell for a global audience. We're telling local stories for a global audience. They repeat the phrase over and over. And there's a couple questions about, like, well, what are, you know, aren't you worried about these regional stories having a hard time traveling globally? And they're like, the entire idea of making a regional television show is from the past. It's because of the business model that shows were so locked in by territory. It wasn't because stories are inherently just so particular to a group of people. You know, they talk about how Narcos has traveled super well. I mean, they don't... What I don't like is they don't give us the data, but they're like, Narcos has traveled really well. Sense 8 travels really well. They even mentioned, I thought it was interesting, they mentioned Suits, the USA show. They're like, we have data, and it basically plays proportionally well in every territory that we're in. And, you know, Ted Sorrento's is like, you wouldn't guess that from the show because it's not an inherently international show. It doesn't have what we think of like Sense8, where it's filmed all around the world. But he's like, it does really, really well. And so they know so many things. And so much of what they talked about, too, in the Q&A is the reason they've launched so quickly is they want, they didn't say it in these words exactly, but basically they want the data. Once they have people using it and once they know what people like, they have such an advantage that no one else has. That's what I don't understand about the coverage of a lot of this is like no one else genuinely has what they have and is on track to even have what no one is in the realm of getting close to this. Not necessarily the content. The content everyone is competing for, the data of what people want, how they watch it, in what forms and in what way. Like, I just think that's a thing people are missing in most of the stories that I hear about this.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I know Hunter, because when you originally mentioned it, because we wanted to, on one of our last episodes, you mentioned it in our text message, that Hunter didn't know anything about it, and Hunter and Thomas couldn't be here tonight, by the way, guys, because they're off doing other things. Hunter's driving in Tennessee, and Thomas is doing cleaning his house. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, but this is like an OG episode, the two originals.
Two originals. But yeah, anyway, you're the one that brought it to our attention because it's not really covered. It wasn't a big story, I guess. To American audience, we're not getting anything new.
Right?
Why does it matter? But it changes the global market essentially because you're mentioning Suits, and I'm looking at, like, their ratings. I mean, their finale for last season was 1.5 million.
Wow.
And 2.13 million for the premiere this year. So it's not like, it's a USA show, and so it's not going to get, like, I guess Modern Family numbers or whatever. But I wouldn't be surprised if more people were watching this show globally. I can almost probably guarantee that there are more people watching it globally than they are in the U.S.
Well, and so that's what's so interesting to me, right? Is like let's run down the list. Like if Walt Disney launched a global streaming service, people would it would be, you know what I mean? It would be the biggest thing, right? And it's likely or possible that they could do something like that in the future, right? It's not what Netflix is doing is not necessarily unique in the sense that it couldn't be repeated. I think that's what's so interesting about this whole situation is like what they've done is they've made a website. They've made a website that hosts video, and then they've basically just turned it on to where they can bill people around the world to access that website, right? There's almost, other than like a lot of fancy stuff behind the scenes and the data that they get and the fact they're making original shows, everything else about it is totally repeatable. Like it's actually a pretty solved problem in like a technical sense. What's so interesting is that so few people or companies are copying it because I really think like the longest comparison that we've made and we talked about on the show is everyone was talking about, you know, can Netflix become HBO faster than HBO becomes Netflix? If you listen to that Q&A, they never mention HBO, but there is a question about Amazon and there's a question about Hulu. And I love the response because Ted Sarandos is basically like, he's like super professional about it, but he's basically like, they're playing in the U.S. market and we're playing globally. Like, that's basically like just, it's a very short answer. It's like, they don't care. They don't see Hulu as a competitor. And it doesn't take much to extrapolate out. Like, HBO is owned by Time Warner. Time Warner is considering selling HBO. They're considering splitting the company up. Like, they're not in a position right now for HBO to go globally beyond what it already kind of has done. And then, anyway, that answers our question of who can become who first. It's not only that Netflix has become HBO. They've surpassed everything that they've done. Other than the fact they made some amazing shows in the past, and we'll continue to make shows, they were never global. And they will potentially never be global. And that's the thing is, like, we've never seen this, Brandon. I don't understand why this isn't, like, blowing people's minds.
it changes the dynamic of the, I don't say the industry, because it's not just like one thing, if that makes sense. Like, it's not changing just the film, it's changing television. It's just it's just changing the way people experience
it. Well, and let's talk about a really simple example that I think we've all grown up with, and this will be going away at some point pretty soon, really, because we think about, I think about like the Star Wars launch, right? This huge, like the biggest phenomenon, right? Like they, so hyped, so good. We all went to it. It's going to cross $2 billion in box office, right? It's a huge thing, right? But here's one of the things that's so interesting. Even with all the hype, all the marketing, all the push, that film was still, for the most part, kind of packaged up and presented to each country at its own time. And it, like, the release dates, it's not that it necessarily showed up everywhere on Earth at once, right? I mean, it was close. It was really close. So I'm not trying to...
Yeah, it was fairly close.
It was fairly close. Like, it's the closest we've seen. And that's why I'm picking the example, is it's the hardest example to make this point with, in a sense.
It's not the closest,
But continue. What I'm saying is that's the biggest thing we've seen, and they tried with all they could to make it as global as possible, right? It's the biggest entertainment thing that's done that. And it took a lot of effort, is what I'm saying. It took a lot of effort from Walt Disney and all these people to do this. Netflix has built a platform where it is inherent to the system that everything will instantly launch globally. So when... It won't be a Star Wars, but when the next big thing is, I don't know what it'll be. Maybe it's the next season of Daredevil that everybody goes crazy about, or even Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I don't know what the thing will be, but if they land it or they make it themselves and it launches, you have the potential for not just like a group of people in the U.S. who are on Twitter to go crazy, or for Facebook to go crazy over something. You have the potential for everyone on Earth to go crazy over it. You know what I mean? Everyone who's a subscriber. But the addressable market is basically everyone with an internet connection. I think that's interesting.
It is. And just to go back off what you were saying, Star Wars was not released everywhere globally. Basically everywhere but China.
Right. Which is still true of Netflix. Let's be clear. They're not in China yet, and they're working on that.
Correct. And I believe Jurassic World was released everywhere the day it came out.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
Well, but this is not to keep hammering this, but it was released everywhere that had a theater, right? Because it was a theatrical release. And I think it's an interesting distinction. It's a small one, but think about this. There are places in the world where theaters are not readily available, and there's a limit to how many people can get tickets. That's a simple thing. It's like, you can sell out a theater, you can't sell out the internet. Like, you have the potential for everyone at once to watch something, and there's no technical reason it couldn't happen.
Yeah, but there are also countries that don't have really access to internet as much as, say, the U.S.
I agree, and that's one of the things they bring up, is that as internet improves around the world, their service is basically right there with it.
I mean, that's why Blockbuster still exists in Mexico, is because Mexico doesn't really have the internet service that we use. I mean, Blockbuster's making a killing in Mexico right now, but it couldn't do anything really at the end here in America.
Well, and I'll tell you what's interesting about this too, though, is that you have the apps, you have the ability to stream this stuff everywhere. And I know I think there's a couple pieces of this that make it so that people in the traditional like Hollywood system kind of like look down on this stuff. But the fact that someone in, you know, Malaysia, pick a country, anywhere, Japan, like South Korea, if they really want to watch Sense8, the moment it comes out, they could watch it on their phone on a bus, and they get it for, in their minds, basically free. And in Netflix's mind, like, they don't care. They have a subscriber. They're making consistent revenue over and over and over again. And just tell me who else has that. You know what I mean? Like you could, in theory, rent the same movie through iTunes or something like that. You know, there are services to get this stuff out there. But the fact that it's so easy, and that was the thing that they kept, you know, Reed Hastings kept coming back to, is like, our goal for the next 10 years, which I think is interesting. Like, they're very much focused on the long game. is like, yeah, we are focused on expanding where we're at, which we're almost done with. We're expanding our content and we're trying to make it as easy as possible for people to use the service. Mm-hmm. That was it. He's like, that's our next 10 years.
Yeah. And so right now they're at, I just read the number. So they're at 74 million subscribers worldwide right now.
Right.
That's what they're at.
And a significant portion of that is US people. I think it's up to
44.
Okay. So, I mean, they have a large portion of US subscribers. And you know, what's weird is like, I'm a nerd. So some of the investment analysis around the stock, and I don't care about the stock market as part of this show necessarily, but like their stock has taken a hit a little bit because of like Wall Street expectations for US growth, right? Yeah. I don't understand. I haven't dug into the numbers enough, but their potential growth, and that's what a lot of this stuff is when you're buying stocks, you're buying the potential growth of a company. Their potential growth overseas is ridiculous. It is utterly insane. And I don't understand how, like, Amazon has a ridiculous stock price and, you know, they don't turn a profit, basically. They reinvest the money back into the company. But, you know, this goes right into Sundance. It's like the two biggest buyers for this past Sundance are Netflix and Amazon. And I understand Netflix's strategy. They have 70 whatever million subscribers and will continue to have tons of subscribers. And if they buy something, it's not going to expire on the shelf. It'll sit there in their catalog. And so they're buying for the long term. Amazon, I know that they have the streaming service, but when we get what little data is out there, like, here's what I don't understand, Brandon. It's US, mostly US only, right? They're buying for a US audience. A lot of data says that a lot of people who have Prime don't even use the video service. Right. And so like they're showing up at the poker table, buying just as much as Netflix, outbidding these other companies, but they have maybe what? If they have the same number of subscribers as Netflix domestically, 40 million, let's be generous and say they have 40 million active users, which I don't think they do. We don't know, but I don't think they do. But even if they did, they make less money per subscriber than Netflix does. Because it's all part of Prime. It's all part of this, you know, all you can eat, everything you ever wanted shipped to your door and, you know, instantly. So they have less money to play with. I just don't understand how Amazon, in the long term, in the next 2 to 5 years, is going to keep showing up at Sundance making these big buys in competition with Netflix. But I'd love to hear, like, you know, tell me more about, because you read up a lot on Sundance and a lot of these buys. A lot of them are crazy.
Yeah, I want to say this stuff first because going off of what you're saying about Amazon, no one actually uses Prime. That kind of goes back to what when we had Barry on the show, what he talked about was that it's almost too confusing.
Sure.
There's like too much there to realize what you're paying for. And that's like really the major way that Amazon can probably compete with Netflix is if they broke off and created something like a separate thing. That would probably be the only way. Because, like you're talking about the numbers, is I'm reading, I don't know how true this is, but I think as of last July, I don't know what the numbers are now, they reported 40 million Amazon Prime subscribers in the U.S. but the question is, how many of those are using the video streaming service?
Right, and see, that's the thing, is like you can get, they do report their Prime membership, because it is a key component that they report to Wall Street. But
they don't report
how many people actively use the service and for how long? Because you got to remember, when Netflix is reporting membership, they're not really reporting members anymore. I mean, they are. They're reporting members. But their key metric is usage, hours on the service. And we don't get that from Amazon. And I think we don't get it because it doesn't happen. Because when you look through their catalog, they have a couple, they buy a couple big things, and then it gets very lean, very, very lean, very quickly. And I watched the first episode of Man in the High Castle. They have the ability to deliver high quality stuff.
Yeah.
But anyone can, that's the thing, is I don't think the content part is necessarily the like magic bullet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm going to go back to what your transition to the Sundance stuff and kind of go back and forth.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, at Sundance this past year, a few weeks ago actually, Amazon and Netflix were the biggest buyers at Sundance. Amazon actually bought the most. Amazon bought oh gosh, 6 films compared to Netflix's 5. The big difference is Amazon bought a $10 million movie. They paid $10 million for one movie, and that was Manchester by the Sea, which was by Kenneth Lonergan. He was writer-director of a movie called You Can Count on Me, which was a few years back, probably about, 12 years, and it was Mark Ruffalo and Laura Linney. Hmm. And it was a movie, I think, that it was, I know it was nominated, I'm not sure if it won an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. And I know Laura Linney was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. And so this is Lonergan's third film, and it was bought for $10 million. And that is, in itself, was a very big deal, because there have only been a few movies that were bought for like $10 million.
In the history of Sundance.
In the history of Sundance. Right. The biggest one until recently was Little Miss Sunshine, which was $10.5 million, which was like, that was a huge deal.
Yeah.
But this one, it was interesting is that it wasn't a studio that bought it. It was the streaming service. And Amazon slowly, the interesting part about Amazon is that they're actually working with studios. They're making deals with studios to where they can get a theatrical release, not through themselves, but through the other studios. So like with Manchester by the Sea, I think was it Roadside Attractions? They partnered with a few people that
to give it a theatrical presence.
To give it a theatrical presence.
So there's a sub-article to one of these that's basically talking about how Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, wants to win an Oscar. He was quoted in an article saying that's what he wants to do. And honestly, that to me explains some of their behavior, is like the fact that they're doing the theatrical release and not necessarily doing it themselves, but just getting it into theaters, that's so they can get an Oscar. And I also think going to Sundance and not necessarily just buying any old film, but they're buying what seems to be like prestige sort of buys, right? They're going for an Oscar.
Yeah, and let's be real. Sundance these past few years has been it's kind of always been that way, but slowly it wasn't as big until just a few years ago. Sundance is actually a big place now for Oscar contending films.
Yeah.
This past year was Brooklyn. Brooklyn was at Sundance, was bought up at Sundance, and now it's a big Oscar contender. Mm-hmm. And Thomas sent us a picture or a article a few days ago, actually yesterday, that was showing like critical reviews compared to the one that won Best Picture for the Oscars. And basically it said, judging on critic reviews, what should have won the Oscars? Yeah. And if they went by the best rated film of this year, it would actually be Brooklyn. And so, and that was where that's like, it was discovered at Sundance. The year before that, you had Whiplash and Boyhood. Mm. And even this, those are three within 2 years that were Oscar contenders, and two of which that won a number of Oscars. Like Whiplash took home, I think, 3 or 4.
Yeah, quite a few.
3 Oscars.
Yeah.
Best editing, best supporting actor, and I think one or two others. But like it's kind of a breeding ground, and so that's a way Amazon is doing that, is they're going to Sundance and trying to buy those up. Manchester by the Sea, I think, will be the biggest one for them, the best chance they have. And if they're pairing with these other theatrical companies that are going to help release it, that's going to help them. And that's the difference, I think, between them and Netflix, is Netflix, I don't think, is really trying to partner with any studio.
Well, but so this is the distinction, I think, because they do talk about how they've partnered with studios for production, but they don't partner for distribution.
With distribution.
Because the studios basically don't want to, and because they also don't really want to. I mean, the only thing they've really put in theater so far has been Beast of No Nation, which...
Yeah.
I mean, by all accounts, bombed. You know, it totally bombed at the box office. But it doesn't matter, because it did pretty well in award season now. Like, Idris Elba has gotten recognition, and...
just not the Oscars.
Just not the Oscars. We can, you know, we've covered that in the previous episode. But yeah, I mean, it's done well in award season. You know, as well as you could hope, I think, for a film of that size. It's a pretty small film in comparison to some of the others.
It does say that it was distributed by Bleecker Street. That Beast of No Nation was distributed by Bleecker Street.
Right. So
Street and not.
Right. Well, sorry. I do think that there is a difference of strategy in Amazon and Netflix. I think you're right. I think some of it reflects the fact that Amazon, I think, is willing to. I don't know this for a fact in looking at all the deals, but I think they're willing to separate day and date to maybe make those deals. Whereas Netflix is, without question, it's going to be day and date. And that is pretty much a no-go if you're...
Yeah, no, it is.
You know, if you're a domestic distributor, how in the world are you going to compete with that? You're not. And that's what we saw with Beast of No Nation. Yeah. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, it's like, for example, to Amazon's major, I guess, example of what they did was with Chi-Raq, Spike Lee's last film, is that it was distributed by Amazon... But it was also, well, actually, no, it was produced by Amazon, Spike Lee's company, 40 Acres and a Mule. But it was distributed by Roadside Attractions. And I think even Lionsgate had a deal with it as well. But it was released limited, and had a limited release first, and then premiered on Amazon Video after that. It wasn't the day and date.
And I think we'll see a lot more of that, honestly. That's the part of this I don't understand, or I just don't know about the domestic scene of all this, is like, how are we going to see some of this play out with theaters? Because I think because Amazon's willing to kind of play around with this, we're going to see some experimentation. And I don't know that, like, Netflix strong insistence, basically, that it has to be day and date. I think they will lose some projects that do want that domestic theater run. It's becoming, in a lot of ways, a purely prestigious thing. Like a prestige play and not a money thing, because you're not going to make your money doing that. But for, I saw in some of these articles, for the buys, the top selling film at Sundance, The Birth of a Nation, there was rumor that a streaming service had $20 million on the table, but they took the, what, 17.5 from...
17.5 from Fox Searchlight,
because of the theatrical. They said they wanted the theatrical, and it was... And that is crazy to me, like $2.5 million potentially walking away from. But that tells you the draw of that prestige. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, and I think, because Birth of a Nation, for those who don't know, was a film directed by Nate Parker, who wrote, directed, starred, and I think produced as well, one of the producers. And it sold for $17.5 million at Sundance.
Record.
And... basically, everyone was going after this film. Almost everyone was going after this film. And that is about $7 million more than any other film prior that received a deal. And it is interesting that if that is true, that, say, Netflix gave them 20, that this might be a bad analogy, but it's kind of the same with people who will only shoot on film and not go digital. There's going to be some pushback by certain people. And so I don't think, because of that, if they're big enough people, I don't think it will really ever die off. It will just change. But that's one reason why I did it, is that you have people like Nate Parker and his group of people who don't want to do the Netflix route, who are like, I want to make a movie. I'm going to put it in a theater. That's what I want to do. And honestly, though, you're making $17.5 million. When you didn't, like, you could have walked in without getting anything. And that prestige of a theater might be worth that $2.5 million. And with the amount of press that it's getting as well, and buzz that it's getting already, I think they'll probably make that up.
I agree. This is where I'm really curious, and I want to write something about this, because to me it seems like the big story that I really just haven't read. Like, I just haven't seen this in the world. But everyone's talking about this year at Sundance and how... all the the non-streaming buyers were flabbergasted, you know, and there's a headline of that they're shooting with machine guns and we're using guns.
We're shooting with bullets and they're shooting with machine guns.
Yeah, it doesn't even make sense. But anyway,
it doesn't.
Anyway, this is what I don't understand. You don't have to fast forward much further than next year or the year after. How is this going to be different next time we come back and buy it at Sundance. It's going to be probably even more of what we saw. I mean, Amazon, unless something changes, is going to keep turning this knob. They're going to keep buying as much as they can, unless something at the broader, you know, corporate structure changes. They're doing pretty well. And Netflix, they just expanded globally. They're going to have, I think unless we're really wrong about this, unless I'm really wrong about it, they're going to have global subscriber growth that is going to blow people's minds, potentially. And if they do, they're going to have a cookie jar of a lot of money to shop and buy for these things. And so next year, for Birth of No Nation 2, or whatever the next hot film is that's going to be out, I mean, this year, they turned down roughly a $2.5 million difference, right? Yeah. That makes, you can kind of go, wow, that's a lot of money, but okay, fine, you walked away. But what's going to happen when, like, here's the key thing. What is Birth of, what is this film going to do at the theater this year, now that it's been bought up for such a high price tag? Like, there's an even higher bar for it to cross at theater, which we'll see how it does. But then next time when Netflix shows up with $30 million, you have to say yes. That's the thing, is like, as much as people want to shoot on film, like you said, your analogy is great. As much as people want to shoot on film, there's a point where the red camera comes in and it's like, look, shoot on 8K, you know, shoot on 8K, reframe shots in post because you can.
Yeah.
And it's going to be way cheaper, way faster, way better. Like, you can't argue against that. Like, I don't think that what Netflix is doing is perfect, but I think there's so much money that's going to be behind this. I think we're going to hear about people holding out for, like you said, film that's beyond rational, at least in an economic sense.
Yeah. Here, and this goes into a different topic about the film stuff. I think, to me, shooting on film is something you should earn, personally. I don't think a filmmaker who's never made a film should argue they had the right to shoot on film. I think someone like Steven Spielberg or Chris Nolan or J.J. Abrams have the right to shoot on film. I think they've earned that right. They have enough clout and they have enough money to back them to shoot on film.
Right, and that's the key, is the money allows you that creative freedom.
No, it does. It does. That's why the Star Wars movies are always going to be shot on film, apparently, from now on. And that's a big screw you to George Lucas, who was like, all digital, all the time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, Colin Trevorrow at I think Sundance or recently in an interview, he stated that he's doing Star Wars Episode 9. He said it will be shot on film. And I said, with the money, you can do whatever you want to in the industry. If you have enough clout, you have enough money to back you, you can do that. It's like, there's going to be pushback, but it won't be, it's always going to be interesting with this stuff, but there's going to be, the pushback is going to get stronger next year.
Yeah.
I think it's because, and like you said, Netflix is going to bring in $30 million. Like, next year, we're probably talking that Netflix and Amazon bought up 8 or 9 films each.
Right.
And it's going to slowly increase. Because when you look at these other films, these other studios, it's like you had Magnolia Pictures go out with 3, Sony Pictures Classic go out with 3, Paramount go out with 2, A24 go out with 2, and then everyone else goes out with just 1 buy.
Right.
Pretty much. And it's... most films that are at Sundance usually get bought and are shown elsewhere at some point. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be interesting. And until someone at Sundance like says, you know what, when they have their film, they do the opposite of what Nate Parker did and decided, hey, we're going to do just Netflix and that's it. I don't care about the theater. It's gonna depend on the filmmaker, is the thing. And I don't know. It's going to change. And also, too, with the folding of certain independent companies or the shakeup of independent companies like, say, Focus Features or maybe even the Weinsteins, it could change the game.
Yeah, and I think I want to clarify just a little bit of what I've been trying to roll through my head, which is that Netflix doesn't have to own everything to succeed. No. You know, and so I think next year at Sundance, yeah, they might buy 10, they might buy 7. Like, it's not necessarily the number, and it's not even necessarily the amount that they pay for it necessarily. It's that I think they will basically have first dibs. Yeah, and not first dibs in the basic sense. It's that they will offer the highest price for the things they want. You know, they will take what they want, basically. And I think the key is that there's room in the world for Amazon to exist. There's room in the world for Hulu, for HBO, for all these other companies to, in some form, exist. And some of these companies will get one film at Sundance, you know? But I think the key thing to figure out is, like, if, because Netflix has the data, because Netflix has a bigger audience than, you know, than the box office, basically. You know what I mean? They're going to hit a point where you're going to be able to have more people in a seat watch your film than people go to a theater, even if you just gave it away and said, come into the theater. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a certain point we're going to hit within the pretty near future. I don't know what that number is, but think about it. When they have 100 million subscribers, when they have, if they have 150 million subscribers, would you say no to that? Like, if you had a chance to have your film seen by 200 million people on Earth, there's, you know, there's 7 billion and they're going to hit, I mean, the only limit right now is people with an internet connection, which is obviously lower than 7 billion, but it's pretty high. Yeah. It's a couple billion people with an internet connection. And then at that point, it's people willing to pay for your service. And so that's probably an economic thing that is another subset. But you're talking about a potential audience of a billion, 500 million. I don't know what that number is. We're going to find out. But it's going to be huge potentially. And people are going to, a lot of people are going to join that train because it's going to be a very rich train.
Yeah. And that's not even talking if China opens its doors and lets people like Netflix come in, which would change
a billion people, and they are planning to be there. It's up to government at approval, some point, but yeah, when that comes in,
that's going to be a big deal.
Tell me that's not crazy. Like, it's going to get crazy
because Netflix will control how they promote your thing on their ad, or on their program. Like, they control how it's promoted. When you come up, no matter what you're viewing or whatever, you're probably going to see Beasts of No Nation or whatever on the top page.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, it's the whole like video store effect. If you see it, you might, oh, you know, I'll check that out.
Well, and not just check it out, right, you're gonna click it instantly. That's what's different than the Blockbuster. And the other key thing that I think a lot of these other people are missing is the data. Like, they're gonna buy your film and they're not gonna necessarily tell you how it does. Because they're buying these things, at a fixed price, and they're saying, thanks, see you later. And apparently, like, I've heard from like rumblings of like the House of Cards producers, they have a basic idea of how the show is doing, but even like a prestige in-house made for Netflix show, they don't necessarily know how it's doing. It's that's crazy.
Yeah, that could be a problem in the future, by the way. That could be a problem.
I feel like that's a great hook for what our next episode could be about, Brandon, because I don't know what you mean by that, but I want to find out.
If a producer, I'll say this real quick, if a show is doing well and a producer doesn't know about it, money gets involved. Is who should get more money? Like, if Netflix is making all the money, but the people who are actually doing the hard work don't know how much is actually doing well, and they're not seeing a profit to it.
Well, I mean, this is going to raise all sorts of questions about residuals.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, that's the thing.
Residuals, and that's come up on script notes. It just is unclear. It's just really unclear.
That'll be an issue. But let's wrap it up. So, give me a recommendation for people or for the audience, for people to go watch or see or hear or read or whatever.
Well, I didn't mention this at the beginning because I was thinking so much about all the Netflix stuff, but I actually watched an episode of a show called Utopia, which was a British show that got, apparently it was going to be the American version was going to come to Netflix, and I think, and then, or no, the British version was going to come to Netflix, and then
HBO bought it up.
Ooh, and it's going to become an American show, but it's going to be remade as an HBO thing. And I'm excited because, oh my gosh, the first episode of the British version, wow. It was crazy. I haven't been able to watch another episode because it's way too violent for any small humans to see. It's very violent. It's weird. It's a conspiracy kind of thing like Sense8, and I love that. Uh-huh. It's great.
Okay. So my recommendation is, of course, a movie in theaters. It's Hail Caesar. It just came out really today as we're recording this. But at our school, USC, they showed a advanced screening of it a week ago. So Thomas and I got to see it. It's a Coen Brothers movie. It's enjoy. If you love like old Hollywood, and if you like the Coen Brothers, you're like one of them, you're going to like this probably. Good performances, funny, something to go see. Channing Tatum, one of his best roles ever, hands down.
I'm excited.
Like it's at our place, his for one of his scenes got an ovation, got a huge applause.
Wow.
And that really never happens in a movie like in the middle of it. So yeah, it's a good movie to watch. But yeah, that's one to go see. Make sure you guys subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a rating. Give us a review. We want to know what you guys think. We got to hear feedback so we can make the show as good as possible. Also, make sure you...
argue with us on Twitter.
Follow us on Twitter. Argue with us. Our CineNation account, at CineNation Show. Make sure you like us on Facebook and make sure you follow us on Medium. Hopefully we can get more stuff out there for you guys to read. And hey, if you guys write something for us, send it to us and we'll be willing to put it up there. So yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. Bye.